Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Leslie Klein. She's an organic farmer and seed producer, and now manager of a seed producer co-op called Triple Divide Seeds. She lives in western Montana near the Flathead River on the Good Egg Farm, named for the egg business that sustained her for many years. Now she focuses on seed and running a small business selling seed. So first, thank you for being on the program. Second, thank you for your work in the world.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here talking about it.
So why is independent seed collecting, producing, selling, why is this important, and why am I interviewing you?
Seed is the basis of our entire food system, as everyone can know if they think about it a little bit. And as humans have modernized and gotten away from their farming, more and more people have left farms. A lot of seeds the seed system has changed as well, and it's become more centralized and more industrialized and subject to the capitalist system, where people protect those seeds and the genetic resources in them. And so we're part of this big movement of reviving access to open pollinated seeds and making more and more stuff available to seed breeders who don't want to protect that seed but want to make it available to everyone freely. So first of all, open pollinated just means that the seeds that we grow can be regrown by someone in their garden, by anyone who grows this plant. They can then reproduce it themselves, and it will come true. So you can regrow hybrid seeds. They just might not look like what you think what you grew originally. So the open pollinated just means it's available to everyone, which is a good thing. And the fact that there is this great interest in seed saving is really heartening. One of our missions is to educate people about that. So we give workshops and educate ourselves and others on how to grow seed better and do it on any level. You can do this in your backyard, or you can do it on a big farm for money, for contracts. So, it's important. Go ahead.
So back when I was, in my early 20s, I came across this book, which was titled something to the effect of Seed Savers Exchange or something like that. And this book, basically what it was, is a collection of 119 varieties of cucumber where you could buy them. And this book it really was very formative to my understanding of this whole notion of seed saving. And there was one part of it where they were talking about how there was a biodiversity crash or a diversity crash within seeds that was sort of paralleling the biodiversity crash of wildlife. Can you talk about that a little bit, about how, and you can either, I mean, let us know if you're going to make them up, but you can even just make up numbers that would give us an idea of how this is going. Do you see what I'm getting at? Like, it was saying that there used to be, and I'm making these numbers up, there used to be 340 varieties of cucumber in 1920, and then by 1970 there were 116, and by 1980 there were 79 or something. Again, I'm making up the numbers. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I can try. You know, I will not have those numbers either, and I can just say that in general, I think it's gone both ways, Derek, actually, because yes, there has been a consolidation of seed varieties into various companies that then kind of makes them unavailable for various reasons. They just disappear. And so there is a loss. There has been a loss of varieties due to that that trend and the power that those corporations have, and then the fact that people kind of stopped doing that on their own. They stopped saving those varieties on their own. So some of those varieties were just lost. And I think right now, in the last 20, since you read that book, Seed Savers Exchange has been counteracting that by creating this forum for people who have been doing that all along, saving those varieties, you know, asking their 80-year-old neighbor to, you know, for those tomato seeds that are different than any other tomato, and keeping that alive. So that forum now exists with Seed Savers Exchange, and there's some others too. So that now we can go there and have access to those. So yes, there was a loss, but now because of the internet and all the cool things we have, we actually have access to a ton of varieties if you go looking for them. So that's the positive spin on that, and that there's people working to counteract that corporate protection and get takeaway of varieties.
So I want to tell two quick stories. One of them is that before I moved to Northern California, where I live now, I always thought berries were a waste of time. They were just not very flavorable packets of semi-sweet water that were overpriced in grocery stores. And where I live now, blackberries grow, blueberries grow, and I no longer understand why anybody invented candy, because they're so good. And then another part of the story is I've basically felt that way traditionally about tomatoes, that tomatoes are basically a big red garnish for your plate that you can eat, but why bother? And then a couple years ago, I was walking out of the feed store, and there was a local farmer with a table set up there selling their homegrown heirloom tomatoes. And let's not focus on heirloom for a moment. Let's just focus on taste.
Okay.
And I bought some from them, and oh my God, I had never before in my life had a tomato.
Yeah.
These were eating them was to, I don't know whether I'm participating in some sort of sacred communion or if I am experiencing a piece of art, but it was a profoundly moving experience, and I'm not exaggerating or making a joke.
Yeah.
So can you sort of riff on those two stories?
What was the first story? I'm sorry.
The first story was how I didn't like berries until I moved here and had real berries.
Thanks. Right. Oh, I'm so glad that happened with the tomato. Yeah. So it's true that we were all sort of living in food deserts in like the 60s and 70s and 80s. If you were eating out of supermarkets, and which most of us were, the variety of vegetables was incredibly small there. Commercially available varieties were terrible, of certain vegetables in particular. Tomatoes is a great example, because they were bred to be shipped long distances, so they were hard and picked unripe, and they were pretty terrible. So if you grew up eating homegrown tomatoes, those would taste like cardboard or something worthless. So that eye-opening experience of having a tomato that wasn't one of those terrible varieties from the grocery store can turn your life around. Now a lot of those varieties are getting more commercially available. But it's true that I live in this world where there are a million varieties around me and available, and I'm thinking about them all the time, but they are not commercially available. So my optimistic view is probably not shared by people eating out at the grocery store. So yes, it helps to have access to a farmer's market or a local farm or a little piece of ground in your backyard where you can try some things out that will have actual taste and kind of blow your socks off like that, and avoid some of the commercial varieties in the grocery store for sure.
So what sort of seeds do you sell through your organization, through Triple Divide Seeds? Are they mainly vegetable, or are there other? I'll just leave it at that. What do you sell?
Yeah, we sell vegetable seed and flowers and herbs, kind of what you would find in a seed catalog of that type. And we try to cover a lot of the bases. We sell seed varieties, vegetable varieties that we have grown ourselves and that do well in our particular ecosystem, in our climate, in Montana, in our region. So we call them regionally adapted seeds. A lot of us who started the co-op and are growers for the co-op either have had vegetable produce businesses or still do and combine those things. So we're constantly, you know, looking for those. Either we've been growing these varieties for years and years and love them and want to share them with people, or we're just, you know, open to new things and trying new things and looking for the ones that do well here in our area. So that's the main. We try to kind of curate a collection of seeds that someone can come in and buy and know they're going to do well in their backyard in Montana. Whereas if you just bought from Burpees or some kind of nationally distributed catalog, you know, half of the things probably wouldn't even grow well. You might not even get a crop, and it would be very disappointing. So we try to set people up for success with things that we think will do well right here where we live.
I have one more fantasy food story to tell,
yeah.
Which is I've always loved potatoes. I don't care what form, and they can even be, that's not true. You know, honestly, the potatoes from grocery stores these days are basically just a buttered delivery system. They're almost tasteless. But one time I grew a whole bunch of varieties that I got from a seed producer, or a potato producer who did something similar to what you're doing. And mm-hmm. I got this one type called German Butterball.
Mm-hmm.
And this was 25 years ago.
Mm.
And I still have fantasies about German Butterball potatoes. They were so good. So what I'm leading into is, can you just go through a couple of, like, I don't know, I don't even care what type of vegetable, whether it's some radish that is like this amazing thing. Can you just go, so say somebody lives in Arkansas or Nova Scotia, and they might not have the same climate as you, but just sort of open their eyes a little bit to the possibility of, I don't know, a turnip tasting good. So it doesn't matter. So just tell a couple of stories of your greatest, you know, fantasy seeds from your place. Or it could also be a story of one that was difficult to get a hold of, or one that was difficult to grow. Just tell a couple stories.
Okay. Well, one of the taste things that comes to mind just randomly has to do with cucumbers. A lot of the cucumbers you buy in the grocery store are called like an American type cucumber. There's a lot of different varieties, but that is as opposed to a Middle Eastern type cucumber. And the American type tend to have kind of thicker skin, and they can be bitter in the skin. You might want to peel some of that off and not have as much skin. And that is opposed to these beta alpha types, they're called sometimes, or Middle Eastern, where the skin is just super tender, and the cucumber is juicy. There is no bitterness. And you just wonder, why are we not growing these all the time? like, what about these? Is there, and I suppose it's that they don't ship well. So if you're going to grow cucumbers in your yard, I would recommend looking for that Middle Eastern cucumber, which we sell. And another, are you okay there with your dog?
Oh yeah, he's making sure that that nobody no planes land or
okay.
Nobody breaches the defenses.
I was worried about my dogs, but they've been quiet. So another story would, which is a more unusual vegetable, would be this thing called a naked seed pumpkin. Now people eat pumpkin and squash seeds a lot, and they roast them or, you know, salt them and eat them, but they have this thick white hull that's just all kind of indigestible fiber, whereas there is this type of pumpkin called naked seed pumpkin, and there's a few varieties, and we sell one that actually has my farm name on it because I've been selecting it for a long time. You open the pumpkin, the seeds are dark green and glossy. There's no hull on the seeds. They're hullless, therefore called naked. And you can dry those and then either eat them raw or roast them. And they're just that pure, delicious, nutritious inner part of the seed without that inedible or indigestible hull. And that is just like a remarkable food resource to grow in your farm. Vegetable protein and with all that incredible nutrients, and easy to grow because they're pumpkins and they just go crazy, but it's not very well known, and it's been something I kind of proselytize about, like, you should try these. so there's another one.
So are there any others that you like to proselytize about? I think these stories are really important to help us remember that there is food beyond the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. You know, vegetables.
Well, like one. I remember I got really excited at the same time as the German butterballs. I got really excited because I discovered rat tail radishes. That I had never heard of before, and it's for listeners, it's a radish that you don't eat the root. Instead, you pick the seed pods when they're really young. If you wait too long, they get woody. And you get, like, I don't know, 15, 20 times as much volume per plant than you would if you just ate the radish, ate the root. And it's pretty cool. I had no idea they existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they're delicious, too.
Yes, that's right, like stir-fried and or raw. Yeah, that's a good one. We should grow that, in fact. Let's see. One of the things that we grow that's kind of, where we sell that's kind of unique is a amaranth that is just like a quadruple threat because you eat the greens when they're young. When they're 4 or 5 inches tall, the greens are just mild, delicious, raw, cooked, and then as it grows up, it makes this beautiful flower, this tall, like 4 or 5 foot tall red plume that's really showy and gorgeous. And then, of course, it makes seeds, which if you the birds love them, or you can harvest them and use them in your own cooking. So that's one that if you don't have a lot of space and you like flowers, you can grow, you know, a couple kinds of food in one plant. Yeah, so, let's see. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Well, another one that I grow a lot, that I grow have grown for a long time is a parsnip. And people don't tend to grow parsnips anymore. It's kind of an old-fashioned vegetable. But even when they do, I find they don't harvest it at the right time. So a parsnip should be started right now in the early spring, and then you would harvest it a year later. So right now I can go in my garden and dig up parsnips that wintered over underground, and they are sweet as candy. Speaking of why invent candy, these parsnips are like candy and creamy, and you just like saute them in a little butter, and they soften into this delicious sweet mush. But if you harvest them too early, like in the fall or late summer, they're okay, but they're nothing you're going to want to eat, you know, a ton of. So harvest your parsnips in the spring. That's my tip.
So before we go to the sort of larger political implications of all of this and why seed saving, seed sharing is revolutionary and or important, I want to talk about the word heirloom for a second, because before we started the interview, I used the word heirloom, and you said, well, the word heirloom ends up being a little bit complicated. So can you talk about how the word heirloom is complicated?
Yeah, it doesn't have a specific meaning in the like seed world. It's generally, it means a variety of vegetable that's been around for decades, maybe even hundreds of years, or one that has a story, but kind of just like other varieties or forces in the seed world that narrow things down. We've gotten to know a few heirlooms, you know, like Cherokee purple tomato, or, you know, a few things have become popular where there's like hundreds and thousands of varieties that could be considered heirloom. And then there's the fact that constantly plants are changing. So that heirloom tomato that's been around for hundreds of years, everybody that grows it is selecting for something. And so it's changing, and that's a good thing. That's the like amazing creative part of this, is that things are always getting selected for and changing for what we want. Sweet corn gets sweeter, tomatoes get sweeter. And now we're also in this kind of renaissance of organic plant breeding, where sometimes we say we're creating new heirlooms because we're working on new varieties that are open pollinated and available to everyone and have stories because they came from somewhere and somebody made them. And now we're offering these new varieties. And the new varieties are also delicious and amazing. So an heirloom is cool. And sometimes we don't even know the story. Like, we can say something is an heirloom, but a lot of times very little is known about it. So it's rare that a breed has like a documented life story that goes back a long ways. It does happen, and it's pretty cool. But we sell heirlooms, but we also sell things that are maybe considered more modern, but they have all those good qualities that maybe have been bred out of an heirloom and crossed with something else. And we've created new things that are really valuable and delicious, and just as, you know, we want to promote those too.
So I'm going to put off the political question again for a second and talk about, say there's someone who is a novice gardener or a young intermediate gardener. Is seed saving and also seed selecting, which is a separate thing, is that scary and difficult, or is that something that really anybody can do and have a reasonable success?
Yeah, it's easy and hopefully not scary. Yeah, it is available to pretty much everyone. You can find out with just a little bit of reading, you can figure out which types of vegetables would be the easiest to start with. There's ones that just cross with themselves, and so you don't have to worry about what's around them, what other varieties you're growing. Beans is a good example. It's so easy to save your own bean seed. You just let a little bit of your row go unpicked if you're growing green beans, you just let those green beans hang and dry. And in the fall, you pick those pods and you shell those beans, and that's your seed crop for the next year. So those are annual self-pollinated crops. Another one would be tomatoes. Super easy. Kind of fun because you squish the tomato juice with the seeds into a little jar and you let that ferment for three days. And that breaks down the pulpy encapsulated seed, well, breaks that down, and so the seed is floating free. And then you run it through a strainer and put it on a little dishcloth and dry it out, and there's your seed for next year. There's a few resources easy to find. You know, Seed to Seed is one, and Grow Your Own Seed to Bloom and Grow Your Own Vegetable Varieties is another, you know, things that you can find to help do that. But you can just know nothing and let your plants go to seed and collect it and plant it the next year and see what happens if you're in an experimental type. So if you grow squash, your squash might cross with each other and you'll get a lot of different stuff. You might not like some of it, but it might be kind of fun. So basically, you can know as little or as much as you are ready for and still save seed. Flowers is another good example. Just save your flower seed to plant. Flowers are beautiful even when they've crossed with something, so with another color or something. Hopefully people can be liberated to just try that out, and you'll get hooked, and pretty soon nothing will stop you. You'll just keep doing it no matter what. So I was influenced by a book, speaking of books, a long time ago by this book that I want to name called Breed Your Own Vegetable Varieties by a woman named Carol Deppe, Deppe. And I think it came out originally in like the 90s or in 93. And it was kind of a revelation. It was just like a do-it-yourself in your own backyard, you know, permission to go cross things and play with the genetics of your plants and see what happens. And so that was a really influential one for me. So yeah, seed saving is one thing. It's just you can maintain a variety, which is important work. So you'd plant your row of peppers, say, and you might want to remember to not harvest from a couple of plants that didn't do very well, like they were kind of shrimpy or had a little disease or something, and you would harvest your seeds from peppers that grew on the most robust and the most tasty, and then you just go in and cut the peppers open. When they're red, you let the peppers get fully ripe, and then the seeds are ready and mature also, and that's another easy one. So that way you're maintaining your variety, and that's important to maintain the good qualities and the healthy disease resistance, and at the same time you're adapting it to your climate and your area, because those ones that did well, those are the ones that have the right qualities to grow well where you live. If you do that for a few years, you will see some results. You'll have happier peppers and better production and things like that.
So all of this talk of seeds made me think of something else that annoys me, which is that I haven't had a good watermelon in probably 15, 20 years. I used to love watermelons, but the only ones I can buy in the grocery store these days are the seedless, and honestly, I don't like the taste, such as it is. So I want good watermelons. That's all.
Okay. that is one I don't... We sell a couple watermelons that do well in our, watermelon disadvantaged area because they don't like cold nights. Watermelons don't typically love Montana. So I can't say much about watermelons. I know they're out there. I know there's good ones. My friends grow them, but I don't. Yeah, go to a farmer's market. There's got to be some in California, of all places. There's got to be.
Well, the problem is, not problem, is I live in far northwest California, which means I live in temperate rainforest.
Uh-huh.
So a hot day in the summer is maybe 65, maybe 70.
Oh, they probably don't like it there either, yeah.
Yeah, but you go 20 miles east up in the mountains and they get to 100. So
uh-huh.
So I just need to find a source, man.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, those are good.
So I love the line by Kropotkin about how so many revolutions have foundered because of bread. And what he means by that is people need to be fed, and as long as we are reliant upon the system for our food, even if the system is exploiting us, that doesn't matter because we're dependent on it, and so tough luck for us. So can you talk about the importance of supporting small farmers, small seed growers? Can you talk about the importance of localizing food systems, of getting away from the large corporate food system, whether that large corporate food system is seeds by the conglomerates or whether it's seedless damn watermelon from Safeway?
For us, for sure, we want to be, we're part of our local economy. So we want people to buy our seeds, because we live here, we support their businesses. It's a very mutually supportive situation. So just on the really small level, it's important that way. If you can buy something from the people who live in your town, it's always a good thing to do. It will help us all in the long run. And then, we are part of a food system, recreating a food system that means we can grow our own food in Montana and not be dependent on a system that can get interrupted for any reason or not be healthy because of various chemical use or the way animals are treated. So when you support the things you can see that are healthy, that's a great choice to make. We try to be, because our co-op is small, there are 10 farms, all of us are certified organic, we're able to be very transparent about how we grow and what we do to our land and things like that. So it's great to be able to support the farms you can see, the ones you can actually, you don't have to take anybody's word for it. You can see that they're not using chemicals because they're right next door. It's the corporate overlords are not our friends in many ways. I mean, we have this incredible food system that has kept us alive, and I don't want to completely, run it down. It's hard to grow enough calories to feed yourself. It's hard to grow all your own food or even in the area grow your own food. So we are dependent on getting food from all over the place. But you can make little inroads and, grow pumpkin seeds for protein or dry beans for protein, as well as, put up your can your pickles and things like that. So you can make small steps and support your neighbors, and they'll support you, hopefully.
And just generically, diversity tends to bring strength or resilience, I should say. And so if one has multiple sources of either foodstuffs or or seeds that is going to pretty much by definition be a more stable and resilient system than if those foodstuffs or seeds are highly centralized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking of, I have no idea what the numbers are for seeds, and I'm kind of making up the numbers for food, but I remember reading 15, 20 years ago about how basically, again, I'm generally making up the numbers, but I'm not making up the effect, that basically there's four companies control 80% of the pork market, you know, five companies control 70% of the beef market, three companies control 70% of the rice market. You know, it's all, and that I remember, even when I wasn't particularly politicized, I found that completely terrifying, because that means basically if you control the food supplies, you can control people. And so having those food supplies so centralized, I find both personally and politically terrifying. And in, you know, as well as among other ways, I think that's one of the reasons that I wanted to interview you. And I think that you're doing just such incredibly important work, is that anybody who can, as you said, make little inroads against that, I think is doing incredibly important work.
Yeah, that's definitely true of the seed world. And you can find those charts of, as that the seed genetic diversity or the seed varieties are concentrated more and more. And yeah, it's something like that. Three companies control 90% of the seeds sold worldwide, something like that. Syngenta and Monsanto and a couple others. Yeah, that's definitely true. And we are wresting control away from those in our small way. There's another organization I wanted to mention along those lines, and it's called OSSI, O-S-S-I, and it stands for Open Source Seed Initiative, and it's working to, there are breeders who are creating varieties, breeding plants, working with plants, with vegetable varieties, who don't want that creation or that work they've done to be taken over by and patented by a corporation. So this organization has a pledge that says you can use these seeds for anything you want. You just can't ever restrict them and keep anyone else from using them. You can never profit from them in a way that restricts access to other people. So we have maybe 10 varieties available in our catalog that are OSSI varieties that are registered with this organization, and we need to do a better job on our website, but we credit them. And we have the pledge on our website that you can buy these seeds, but you can't restrict access. You can use them for breeding. You can sell them. You can do whatever you want, but you can't patent them. And so that's a force for good in our seed world, because it's helping breeders do their work, and you can also give a little kickback to those people who helped make those varieties available, because they need to make a living too, and that's what patents have, you know, helped corporations make tons of money, and we can help these breeders make a living by supporting that organization and those breeders. So yeah, we're a part of that community, and it's a really revolutionary and cool thing. And one of the founders works in the university, so we definitely have allies in the university system that are aware of how restricted the seed world has become, and there's more and more like contractual languages on bags of seed that say you can't do this, this, and this with it, and it's created this kind of chilling effect on the whole the whole industry, you have to, sometimes it's not even clear what the restrictions are, and you don't find out later. So they're doing a lot of work to kind of uncover that and then make whatever they do free and available to the human species over time.
So we have about 7 or 8 minutes left, and I have a couple questions. One of them is, you mentioned your website. Can you say how people can find your seeds and buy them? And a corollary question to that is, you said bred for Montana, mm-hmm. and does that mean that somebody from North Dakota should not buy from you? What about somebody from West Texas?
Mm.
So that's the first question, is how do people buy and should they buy? And then I have another question after that.
Okay. Yes, you can purchase our seeds off our website, tripledivideseeds.com. And yes, if you live in North Idaho, or if you live in Idaho, you should definitely buy our seeds. And if you live in Texas, there's a lot of things that will do fine for you, and some things might not. So you can pick and choose. Now, you should buy our seeds and try them out wherever you live. That's what I have to say.
And worst case scenario is you wasted a couple bucks.
Yeah, you tried them and they didn't work. So, yeah. And then you can also buy our seeds in some stores in Montana. We have a small rack business, like 15 stores around the state of Montana. So if you're in one of those places, go in and buy our seeds. Yeah.
And if they're going to buy some seeds, I'm presuming that fairly high on this list are the naked seed pumpkins?
Yes, I recommend those. Try those out if you like. And they'll grow anywhere in the country probably. They would do well. Most of the regional adaptation has to do with our cooler climate and cooler nights. So if you live in a warmer place, things are probably going to do okay. It's just that if a lot of the things we would buy from down south would not do okay up here. So you have a little more leeway growing them down south. But yeah, try out those naked seed pumpkins. We have a lot of unusual varieties that you might not see other places. You know, a squash called Lower Salmon that was developed in Idaho, and actually two watermelons, Derek, that were developed in Idaho and Montana, Bozeman and Blacktail Mountain. Yeah, a lot of things you won't see other places, so definitely check it out.
And then the really last question here, unless you have other things you want to talk about, the last question here would be, so if somebody loves seeds and lives in Alabama and is not particularly interested in the cool night seeds, but they want to join this particular movement/revolution, and they want to start actively participating in preserving and enhancing vegetable and flower diversity, what should they do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's groups of people around the country doing this work, and you could find them wherever you are. Now, Seed Savers Exchanges is a great place to start, because if you join that organization, they'll send you a yearbook, it's called, and it's just packed full of varieties for sale and the name of who grew them and the state where they were grown. You can track people down. You can find the people in your neighborhood or your state that are contributing, growing seeds and selling them through Seed Savers Exchange, which means that it's not a regular company. It's just like you send your $2 to that person and they send you a little envelope with seeds. So you can track down people that way. And sometimes there'll be an event, like in our neighborhood, we have this event called Free the Seeds, where we do a seed swap. People come and they bring seeds they've saved, and they hand them out free, and other people hand theirs out free, and you just take home whatever you want. And then there's workshops on how to do more seed saving, go to the next level. There's the really simple things, but then you might want to learn about biennials, like carrots that you have to plant the next year, and they take 2 years to grow to seed. So you might want to learn the next level of information and take some workshops. I think those things are happening all over the country. And if not, you can, you know, make it happen. Like, bring somebody there to do a workshop in your area. And then just go out and, you know, talk to your neighbors. If your neighbors are gardeners, they might know more than you think about it, about seed saving, or just be doing it, because it's kind of an intuitive, natural thing for humans to do. We've just always done this, and a lot of people do it, and you can just start the same way. Trial and error. Have fun. Go out and examine your plants and you know, save some seeds and see what happens.
So is there anything you've wanted to say that I haven't given you the opportunity?
Nothing comes to mind, but there's so much. I feel really positive. I think I have a pretty optimistic view of seed saving, where it's at in the country, how much interest there is, and also in the amount of diversity that's coming back and that's being recreated or refound and made available. So I have a pretty optimistic view of that, even though I know there's a lot of bad things that have happened over the years to restrict those things. But I support your local seed companies. They're sprouting up all over the place. And grow some vegetables.
Well, thank you so much for your work in the world, and thank you for being on the program. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Leslie Klein. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.